Welcome back, folks. Our Pelicans under some new leadership here as it relates to the draft and how they assess their talent. We go into the draft and we come out, and not uncommon in drafts, criticism, praise, and otherwise. And joining us to help decipher through all of this, Will Guillory, NBA writer with The Athletic. Will, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing? Appreciate you for having me on.
Thank you for joining us, Will. Joe Dumars comes in, obviously brings in a different mindset, a different perspective, maybe some new strategies. They enter the draft. Your thoughts?
No, I think first off, it was the first question I asked him was about just the level of aggression. I think has really stood out early on, and the big talking point around this draft has been the trade up to go get Derrick Queen and them giving away a 2026 unprotected first round pick. It just shows how much he wanted to bring in his guys and the people that they targeted, and they were on a mission to make it happen. I mean, in this post-draft press conference, Joe Dumars said they were looking to trade up as early as number 9 to go up and get Derrick Queen. So they obviously had, the guys they wanted to target going into this draft and also in the trade market, and they pretty much by any means made it happen. So we'll see, how much that pays off for them. But I think, Joe Dumars is certainly standing by the people that he wants to get in there, the team that he wants to run. And, he's given up a lot to make it happen. So we'll see how it works out for him.
Will, as you look at Derrick Queen, is there something that you see that really piques your interest, your curiosity?
I think he's a very unique big in that he's very comfortable facing the basket, making plays off the dribble, has great touch around the basket. I think a lot of, obviously people are seeing the success of Nikola Jokic as a playmaking big, as a guy you can run your offense through at the center position. And obviously, I'm not comparing Derrick Queen to the greatest player on planet Earth, but I think right. Derrick Queen is a guy who can play on the perimeter, be comfortable playing in space, making plays with the ball in his hand. And I think, when you have guys with size who can see the court, who can recognize the double teams, it makes it a little easier to run things in half court, possessions. And I think having him next to Zion Williamson is going to be very interesting because he hasn't played with a big, with this type of skill set and the type of things that Derrick Queen can do. Obviously, I think it'll help if Queen can stretch out and hit three-pointers consistently, be more of a presence on the boards. I think that'll make him a more natural fit next to Zion Williamson. But I just think having a big with that type of skill set who can make plays for himself and others, I think is a dynamic the Pels haven't had in quite some time.
That was going to be my follow-up question. Is there something that Derrick Queen brings that elongates or maybe assists in getting more minutes for Zion on the court? I mean, a lot of times Zion has gotten hurt because he's, in my mind, he's pushing too hard all the time.
Yeah, I think a big thing for sure is this them figuring out this big man rotation where you have, last year's first round pick, Eve Misi. Now you got Derrick Queen. They had another rookie last year, Carlo Mackovich, a former second round pick. So I think they're kind of mixing and matching a few different things with this front court group. I would expect them to add another big man at some point. I know they just signed Hunter Dickinson as a two-way player in the front court, but I think just having these different combinations, that's something that Joe Dumars talked about as well, that desire to play more of these two big lineups, playing two big lineups with Zion Williamson on the floor as well, getting him more on the perimeter, less, in the paint. I think that's potentially something that we're going to see more, and maybe that allows Zion to be more, out in space playing, against smaller players rather than having to get in there and get 10 rebounds or defend the rim. I think they really want to have more size around Zion Williamson. I think, in his first couple of years, the talk was getting more shooting, getting the J.J. Redick's of the world, getting, some of these guys out there, Lonzo Ball, who can stretch the floor, who can hit threes. And I think now they're viewing Zion more as a perimeter player, more as a shot-creating guard. And if that's the case, you want the size around him to kind of take some of those big man duties off of his shoulders.
Obviously, they're going to have to do some work with Derek Queen. One of the criticisms in the scouting combine was his conditioning, 6'10", 246 pounds, seemed to be a little heavy around the center.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, that's the thing he's going to have to focus on, you know, to really excel in the league is just being in better shape and just being able to move around. You know, I think obviously with these bigs in today's NBA, you know they're always going to get tested in pick and roll. These guards are going to bring them out at the three-point line, see how well they move their feet, see if they can run in transition, and I think that's going to be a huge test for him early on. Because I think when you watch Derek Queen, the guy has so much offensive talent. He's going to find a way to be successful on that side of the court. For him to have a long-lasting career and for them to look good making this trade, I think it's all about the other end of the court. Him being a presence on defense, not being a guy who gets targeted by other teams, not being a guy who can be a liability in the paint, protecting the rim. I think the more he's able to get in better shape, get stronger, make an impact on that end of the court, I think that's where he can become a really special player, because we know he's so gifted and he's got such great feel and touch on the offensive end. But we know when Willie Green is your head coach, if you're not making an impact on the defensive end, you're probably not going to get in the game. So I think that's going to be where they really push him early on, is how much is he willing to buy in on the defensive end, not just, you know, in the way he's playing, but the way he's approaching his work on a daily basis.
I guess the same could hold true, and I think maybe that's why they went after Jeremiah Fears from Oklahoma, as well as Micah Peavy from, where was he, Georgetown. He was in three different universities, if my memory serves me correct. Bolstering up that defense as well.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think, you know, Jeremiah Fears is going to be a very interesting development project for them because, you know, obviously they already have DeJounte Murray in there coming off of the Achilles injury. They just traded for Jordan Poole, who I expect to be the starting point guard on opening night. And I think, you know, Jeremiah Fears is a guy they have a great deal of belief in. They think he's got really great potential, but I think they're going to be very mindful of not throwing him in the deep end early on and not forcing him to, you know, be a hub of their offense for 30 minutes a night, you know, at 18 years old. I mean, this guy still hasn't even turned 19 yet. So I think they're going to try to bring him along slowly, allow him to learn the game. Similar to Derek Queen, you know, building up his strength, getting used to playing, you know, with grown men on a nightly basis, the amount of physicality that these guards play with at the NBA level, I think is something new for all of these young guys. So I think people got to be patient with Jeremiah Fears and allow him to learn the game, allow him to kind of grow up before he's ready to really, you know, take over this team. But I think the intention with taking him where they took him was with the idea that, yeah, this is going to be the guy who's running this offense at some point in his career. He's going to be the guy who's leading the charge. And they really believe that he's got those special traits to do that. But I think it was really important for them to surround him with guys who can kind of show him what it looks like before you kind of throw him out there from day one as the starting point guard. Because I think that's a lot for him at this point in his career.
Got a question on the text line, wondering your thoughts about how Queen matched up against Flag when they played each other this year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, Cooper's more of a perimeter guy, more of a, I would say, more of a three than a four. And Derek Queen, I think, is kind of more of your traditional four. I think that's going to be the question is, if they're playing these double big lineups, how much can Derek Queen kind of hold his own if he's asked to defend, you know, perimeter players, guys who are shooting threes, guys who can kind of pump and go, and can he move his feet and make plays in those situations? But I think, you know, I think what I always say is the stuff that makes these guys special on offense, you should be able to tap into that and make an impact on defense as well. I think, you know, Queen has such a high IQ, such a great feel for the game, understanding of how to move in space and angles and all of that stuff. And I think the more he buys into using those gifts on the defensive end, I think he'll be fine in those situations. But I do think he's going to be a target early on, because when these young bigs come in to the league, these guards know. And they identify him and they want to see what you're made of. And I think Queen, more than Fears, I would say, is a guy who is probably going to have to get playing time early on, especially with the rate of roster is constructed early, just because they don't have enough bigs. They need bigs out there outside of Eve Meese. So I think there's going to be pressure early on to get Queen out there in the early rotation. And I think if that's the case, he's going to be tested a lot. And it's not just going to be in one-on-one matchups, So I think he's going to have to lock in and, like you said, get in better shape, get his mentality right, because, you know, playing early on as a rookie is just tough in this league, man, because these guys are really good, they're really strong, and they understand how to take advantage of certain weaknesses.
We're visiting with Will Guillory, NBA writer, The Athletic. Will, you know that here in New Orleans, we understand what you just talked about, that metamorphosis, that change that you have to go through, because we've gone through it with Zion. I mean, Zion's probably one-third the person that he was when he came, or two-thirds the person that he was when he came here.
Yeah, and I think hopefully it doesn't take Queen as long as it took Zion to figure some of that stuff out.
Right? No, if it does, heads will roll.
I think there are going to be a lot of angry people if it takes Queen 2-3 years to kind of figure out how to get himself in shape. But I think, you know, I think that's going to be a huge thing for this team moving forward is can Zion pick up where he left off last year? Because, you know, obviously he only played 30 games. They lost 61 games. It was a horrific season. But I think the one silver lining you could take from it, I think that was the best Zion Williamson has looked his entire career. The way he played, the way his physical shape was from the beginning of the season to the end, the way he was able to maintain his weight and kind of maintain a program with the way he worked, you know, during off days, before games, just kind of figuring out all that type of stuff. I think you saw him take the step that we were waiting for him to take for years. So if he can maintain that and pick up where he left off last year, I think there's a potential for him to have a special season this year. He's going to be one of the best players in the league as long as he's healthy and tapped into what he needs to do physically. And if he's playing at that level, he's just going to raise everybody around him. And I think there are obviously a lot of questions about what Joe Dumars has done with this roster, how he's utilizing his assets. But, man, when you just look 1 through 15 at the dudes on this roster, they've got talent. There's no denying the amount of talent they have on this roster, even with DeJounte Murray out. When you can throw a start lineup out there with Jordan Poole, Trey Murphy, Herb Jones, Z, and Eve Misi, that's pretty good. Those guys are all, you know, threats out there on the court. They can make plays. You need more defensive-minded guys. But I think they got everything they need to compete. It's just about Zion Williamson really being that guy on a nightly basis. And in previous years, they kind of had
a little luck.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
I was going to say we could use a little luck, though, because we've had injuries at the worst times.
No doubt. And timing is everything. Like, before, you've had a cushion of, hey, if it doesn't work out with Zion, at least we got Brandon Ingram who can step in and be the guy, right? And they've been able to make up for not having Z there because of B.I. And even to a certain extent, C.J. McCollum and the way he's been able to lift up the team during those times. But now that backup plan isn't here anymore, right? So if it doesn't work out with Z this year, it's going to look really bad, and it's going to look even worse when you see that pick that's going to Atlanta next year. So I think more than ever, the pressure is on Zion to really carry this team and be the superstar that we've all been waiting for him to kind of become over time.
We're visiting with Will Guillory, NBA writer with The Athletic. Well, there's a whole science about body type. You know, it's a big issue relative to Z when he came out, you know, as to whether or not his body type was going to be resilient enough for today's modern-day basketball game. How do you assess Derek Queen?
I mean, you know, he's still very young. I mean, we got to see, and part of, like you said, we really haven't seen him where he's been locked in on a professional level as far as the way he's eating, the way he's sleeping, the way he's working out on a daily basis. I think a lot of that helps when we're talking about, you know, how much your body can last and if your body's going to prevent you from really lasting. I think, you know, with today's science and the way that the understanding of how they can get the most out of these guys, I think that they are in the best position now they can ever be as far as, you know, extending their career, finding ways to stay healthy, stay on the court. But a big part of that is really buying in and doing all the stuff, right? And I think that's going to be a question for him is how much is he going to be ready to buy in and do the necessary stuff to make sure he's where he needs to be, or is he going to be a kid? And I think, you know, for years, you know, they had to really hope Zion can stop, you know, moving like a kid and stop, you know, thinking that he could just do whatever and show up on game nights and do what he's been done his whole life. And I think when you start playing at this level, you realize how much the off days lead to your success on game nights. And I think you know, going through a few failures and seeing what other guys are doing, that's the lesson that comes along. And I think that's going to be the big question for this Pelicans team, is that now they're very young. You don't have C.J. McCollum in the locker room. You don't have Larry Nance. You don't have some of these vet guys, Jonas Valanciunas, who can kind of be the guy to, hey, this is what it's supposed to look like. And now what does that mean for some of these younger guys they're bringing in? Who's going to help them and show them what it's supposed to look like? And, you know, saying Zion's going to be that guy, I don't know, because he hasn't been that guy previously. But they got to find out who it is, because they're bringing in so much young talent and they're trying to help these guys develop in the way that's conducive to winning.
I've always been partial to that 6'7", 6'8", shooting guard. Micah Peavy's kind of got me a little intrigued. Thoughts about him?
No, I mean, he's super talented. I think he's a guy, you saw him really step up his offensive game during the course of his final season at Georgetown. But, you know, what you really like about him is that he's understanding what his role is going to be when he comes into the league. He's a guy who's going to want to take on that challenge defensively. He's going to want to show his versatility, being able to defend different positions, being switchable out there. I think, you know, being able to learn from a guy like Herb Jones is going to be, you know, huge for him. But I think that's the, like you said, that's the type of prototype you want to look for. Guys with that size, that muscle, who can defend, can move their feet, bring some athleticism. So I think they're really high on him. They targeted him going into the second round. So I think they got a lot of belief in both of these two-way guys they have, Dickinson and Peavy. And they think those guys are going to help next year for sure.
And obviously the existing roster as we know it today, there's going to be some fallouts, right?
Oh, yeah. I think there's still some moves to be made. I mean, Joe Dumars has basically alluded to that. Like I said, they probably still need one more big man in the building. I expect that to happen. They got a few decisions as far as team options and stuff like that, guaranteeing some money, whether it's Elfrid Payton or Brandon Boston. So they got some decisions to be made there. They got to balance the roster out a little bit, but, you know, so far, you know, I kind of like what they're doing. Obviously, a big part of it is they need health, but they're putting young pieces in. They're building this thing out. They're making it more diverse in the way they're building around Zion Williamson. So I'm interested to see, you know, what the next few weeks look like. But we know one thing's for sure. Joe Dumars is going to make a move. We're not going to hear about what Joe Dumars wanted to do, right, like we hear from some of these GMs.
Yeah.
Joe Dumars is going to target his guy, and he's going to go get him. So that's the one thing we can be rest assured.
Absolutely. Will Guillory, thank you so much for joining us. NBA writer with The Athletic. Truly appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great weekend.
Appreciate you, man.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we come back, we'll visit with Councilman J.P. Morrell. Stay with us. So, Civil District Court Judge Jennifer Medley says that the mayor has a constitutional right to travel at the public's expense. The mayor announced she's going to the moon next month. I'm just teasing. Here to talk to us about that is J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member. Maybe she will go to the moon, J.P.
How are you doing, Newell? Yeah, I mean, it's pretty absurd, but honestly, with what's been coming out of district court lately, it's not surprising. I mean, it just seems like there is an absolute effort to do everything possible to maintain the status quo of God Emperor mayors who can do whatever the hell they want. And in this case, it's just they are deferring to her and against the charter to an almost absurd degree at this point.
So what is the council's intention at this point relative to this issue?
We're obviously going to appeal this. This will be our third appeal pending before the Fourth Circuit. Though apparently panels are picked at random, every single panel we have has Sandra Cabrina Jenkins on it, who has been overruled along with the Fourth Circuit by the Supreme Court on numerous occasions. So, I mean, all these cases are going to end up at the Supreme Court. The challenge really, Newell, is just the timing, because the panel how long the Fourth Circuit takes to give us a ruling, we can't go to the Supreme Court. So, I mean, it's just the local politics that's really governing this whole conversation is really gross, because if you look at a lot of this stuff objectively, like right now, not to bring up trash talk again, but we've gotten word that the city attorney is advising all the departments to break the law and move forward with that contract with Mr. Henry on August 1st. And there's no legal basis for it, because regardless of the suspensive appeal argument, Mr. Henry never invalidated the law, nor did he seek to invalidate the law that requires counsel signature. And yet the attorney, at the city attorney, is pushing all faucets of the administration to fast forward this contract. And they're, to believe it or not, every department is giving pushback, saying the law is very clear that this council signature is required, but these activist kind of like politically sensitive judges that are trying to empower this mayor on a way out, they're just setting such horrific bad precedent that is really going to take us months of future legal wrangling and probably potentially charter amendments to clear it up. I mean, working with a variety of different groups, we're in the process of drafting a charter amendment with the city attorney's office, just because this city attorney has gone so rogue, and she is by all means the mayor's attorney and makes no bones about it. And as you know, the city attorney is supposed to be the attorney for the city of New Orleans, doing what's in its best interest, not what's in the best interest of a politician.
Maybe it's ground for a declaratory judgment on what the bounds of her authority really is, right?
I mean, that I would argue you're right, and had this all come to a head 6 months ago, that would probably be a lawsuit worth doing. But at this point, with 6 months left, this city attorney has done such a horrifically bad job, on par, if not as bad as Mayor Cantrell, that really she's just shown us that we need to, by a vote of the charter, really redefine that office to be an office that does not serve the council, does not serve the mayor, but serves the interests of the city. I mean, for example, you know, the city attorney has refused to join the council side on Wisner. We've already won the case, Noel. We've won 100% of the Wisner property for the city, and yet the city attorney, at her own behest and at the mayor, refuses to step forward to join us. Now, what could be more in the city's interest than having 100% of the proceeds from Port Fouchon for land the city would own? Any attorney representing a governmental body or a corporate body, what's in the best interest of citizens is being on the council side, the citizen side in Wisner. Instead, the city attorney in the office at the city attorney's best stays on an island with the mayor, arguing against what is in the best interest of the city of New Orleans.
Well, why not file a complaint with the Bar Association? This is a pretty straightforward representation issue. If you're a represented body, you know, I mean,
I'm in the midst of doing just that. I mean, I've reached this last episode, dealing with the city attorney, with the last round with this attempt to violate the suspensive appeal. Suspensive appeal aside, let me get really basic. When Troy Henry was attempting to get us to force our signature on this contract, and his mandamus in front of Paul at Irons was not to invalidate the signature requirement, it was to make us do it. The suspensive appeal said we don't have to do it. However, to be clear, Mr. Henry not only didn't challenge the law requiring our signature, in the ruling that Judge Irons gave him, she cited the law, cited its validity, and sought to make us do it. All that being said, there is a line on the contract that requires the council signature that is not signed. The city attorney is now advising all the departments, kicking and screaming, I don't care what the current law is, a law that LaToya Cantrell signed, a law that she does not have the power under the charter, Newell, to invalidate. She's telling departments to disregard ordinances because that is what the mayor wants. I mean, I would tell you that we are at a point now where it depends on where my colleagues are, but I think you're really bumping up on malfeasance at this point, Noel.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, there was malfeasance when it came to the Wisner. I mean, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. So let me ask you, let's do this. Can we go to a break and you can hang around for a minute?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, let us go to a break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. We're visiting with J.P. Morrell, City Council Member at Large. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with City Council Member at Large, J.P. Morrell, talking about their ban on travel and the court's ruling. And we moved to the garbage contract. Now we have citizens that have filed a lawsuit against the city relative to the garbage contract. Where do you think that's going to be headed?
I mean, I think that there was always an argument, as you know, that because so many provisions in the contract, for example, as you know, the half a bond, the prepayment of services, the RFP was a hot mess because the actual contract deviated tremendously from the RFP. Those citizens are seeking a declaratory judgment just saying the contract is complete garbage and is null and void. It's actually a much cleaner move and something the council probably should have done initially. And I think that they've got a good case. I think that's going to go all with this, all the way to the Supreme Court, if I had to guess. Yeah. And I think that this is very, I mean, you, Newell, you've been in public service. It is very clear if you look at this contract objectively and you look at how significantly the ultimate contract deviated from the RFP, this is a slam dunk black and white problem. This contract should have been rebid. We literally had three of five department heads in front of us when we discussed this recently, and three of the five department heads believe it should have been rebid because it's gotten turned into such a quagmire mess. So I think those citizens are going to be successful, and I think their taxpayer dollars are at risk. They all have standing. I think that, you know, we'll see what district court does in New Orleans, as you've seen recently, but district court won't have the final say. And the further you move from kind of the cesspool-y politics of the local judges and the more you get to the Fourth Circuit and then to the Supreme Court, you're going to have real debates on the law itself and not just on how we can warp the law to make the mayor get her way.
So one of the most recent travels of the mayor is to the U.S. Conference of Mayors, where she's talking about leadership, and she articulates that because she's black, because she's a woman, that's why she has faced all the trials and tribulations that she's had to face. Your reaction?
Well, I'm black. Five of the seven council members are black. And she's lost every fight at the council with a majority black council voting against her. In fact, all the charter amendments and the like, which were almost all either 5-7 or unanimous, there's been a consistent effort. This is a majority black city where the mayor enjoys a less than 20% approval rating. I mean, you can blame, if you want to avoid responsibility for your own decisions and own actions or inactions, you can always blame people for it. I mean, well, there are people that don't like me. I think the majority of them don't like me for a variety of reasons. I couldn't ever narrow it down to one. And I think anyone who tries to do that is really just trying to avoid. I mean, criticism is criticism. To be elected is to be criticized. Noel, you know that. I mean, no matter how much you're liked or disliked, every elected official has critics, and that's part of being elected. Blaming your critics because your approval ratings are low, because public confidence is low, and because people have lost faith in the direction of the city is really an effort to not do any effort to do a self-evaluation as to what you can be doing better as an elected official. I will tell you that if you ask anybody, including the mayor's supporters, should she be traveling the world right now when we have such significant problems at home, everyone's going to say they would rather the mayor be here trying to actually solve problems. I mean, the reality is we have so many challenges in the city right now, and the council would love to work cooperatively with the mayor. We do work cooperatively with several departments. I mean, Anthony Davis with code enforcement is doing a fantastic job throughout the city actually tearing down blighted property. I mean, the chief is doing a fantastic job lowering crime. Their partners were working with, but that's leadership on an individual level. None of that is with guidance from the mayor, who's largely absent.
I just really think it's a slap in the face to the city, the constituents, so many people that are working hard inside of her administration. She's got some good folks there, where she brings up the Jim Crow South. You know, and I made this observation the other day. I don't think the Jim Crow South had anything to do with the inability to pay the lifeguards. I may be wrong. I don't know.
No, I mean, if you look at a lot of the issues that plague the city on a day-to-day level, the basic services that the council is constantly fighting with the mayor to get done properly, these are all leadership challenges, or let me revise that, a lack of leadership. I think once the mayor checked out, once certain departments checked out because the person who is their boss is checked out, it's like if your boss goes on vacation perpetually and you are in a department in a corporation where everyone's on vacation, you have two choices. You can work harder knowing that your job, your loyalties to the corporation and the best possible outcome, or you can go on vacation too. And I think when you look at a lot of departments that are unresponsive and aren't doing their job, it's because the people at the highest levels have checked out with the mayor, because the mayor has shown that checking out and traveling is preferable in the final months of a term than actually being worried about your legacy. I mean, Newell, when you're at the highest levels of leadership in the city of New Orleans, great mayors are remembered and revered forever. I mean, people look at Dutch Moriel, look at Moon, and like they are pillars of the political community from what they accomplished. You look at other mayors like Ray Nagin, for example, and I mean, no one, his legacy is not a legacy. And I think that this mayor is kind of in the same boat. I think that she'll be a blip in history, and that's a choice she made by not fully committing to the role of being mayor and making this city better and having something that you left that changed the trajectory of the city. If nothing else, I mean, you look at crime, you look at the bright spots in the city's kind of thriving despite the mayor, not because of anything she's doing.
Well, you know, and a lot of the successes have been, you know, with the council stepping up outside of y'all's traditional role, compelling and forcing things, the business community, the not-for-profit community, and just the community at large, you know, really stepping up and taking leadership roles. You know,
it's good to have that,
but you don't want to have that all the time. You want your political folks to lead, right?
Right. I mean, the fact that we created the culture and rec front at the council to provide resources to nonprofits, to provide all these different services to kids, for example, to help them not jiggle door handles anymore. Like, we did all these things because there was no effort by the administration to focus resources into these organizations that were already directly, positively impacting the community, like Son of a Saint or 18th Ward or any of those other groups, or, I mean, Heroes of Algiers, Daughters Beyond Incarceration, all these groups that were doing the work to bring the crime rate down. The city was giving them, the city, this mayor, through Forward New Orleans, whatever the hell they have, they weren't doing any of that. The council stepped up and did that, and we have seen tremendous dividends. I mean, you know, our police department is doing a great job, but the force hasn't grown. The council worked with the school board with Thrive Kids, with the Children's Hospital to put social workers and resources in the schools. We did all this stuff around the mayor. And yeah, I mean, it would have been nice to have a partner who was working toward identifying and solving problems, but kind of what you saw coming into this term was a lot of blaming third parties for why things working out versus actually trying to solve the underlying problems.
Well, thank you all for all that y'all have done, and keep the faith. You know, this it's going to be a good birthday for me, because the last day of her term of office is actually on my birthday, JP, January 11th, 2020.
Happy birthday to you.
Yeah. So I'm looking. I never look forward to birthdays, but I'm really looking forward to this birthday. And we'll just leave it at that on No Filter Friday, my friend. So
have a good 4th of July, Newell.
You too, my friend. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be right back. Check in with Scoot, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Scoot's up next. Free for all Friday. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Yeah, well, it's just a reminder also that really nothing's free, but free for all Friday is fun, you know, because it's one thing that is it is free. You know, the Supreme Court just came down with some new rulings that are going to affect the presidency and society, and we'll talk about those things. Also, there's you know, there's still controversy over the bombing of Iran, and we'll continue to talk about the latest concerning that. There's another video that has gone viral of a passenger that has just gone wild on a flight. And
what is up with these folks?
I don't know. I mean, that's the question. I mean, why are people suddenly, and I mean suddenly, just within the last couple of years, why are people suddenly just going ballistic on flights? You know, you get on a plane, you know, there's not a lot of leg room. It's going to be crowded. You're going to be around people you don't know, people you might not even like if you knew them. And, you know, some people are, you know, not dressed the way you'd like them to be dressed. But, you know, this woman is grabbing this woman's hair and pulling out, and it's, you know, F you this and F you that. And it's over, a seat. You know, she's arguing over a seat. And I just don't understand why people are suddenly so crazy with this. Also, a local Catholic school has fired a beloved music teacher because he's gay. And I wonder, with the scandals the church has dealt with recently, if we think that it's really fair to fire a teacher just because he's gay. So we'll talk about that this afternoon as well. And we're heading into the weekend, and it's going to be hot, but you could still find a lot of stuff to do.
And don't forget, Scoot, WWL and Riverfront Marketing Group, go forth on the river July 4th at 9 p.m., the free fireworks display. And I think the 4th is on a Friday, right?
Yes, it is. All right. Have a good weekend.
It'll be a big night. You too. Scoot's up next. Have a great weekend, folks.